You've heard me talk about Morning Kick, used by former karate champion Chuck Norris. It's a daily drink from Roundhouse Provisions that combines ultra-potent greens like spirulina and kale with probiotics, prebiotics, collagen, and even ashwagandha. Just mix with water, stir, and enjoy. Unlike other green drinks out there, this one tastes similar to strawberry lemonade, and I enjoy it. I know I don't eat as many vegetables as I should, but Morning Kick has helped me make up for that, and I feel great. I have more energy and better digestion. It's an easy part of my morning routine. My wife started taking it as well. Go to roundhouseprovisions.com/Harris for up to 44% off your regular priced order. Plus, every purchase is backed by a 90-day money-back guarantee. So if you want to experience smoother digestion, a boost of energy, and just an overall healthier body, then go to roundhouseprovisions.com/Harris today.
Hey, everyone. We're live now, AD. We're live.
I almost just said a joke. That was good, though. Keep going.
Can you say it now that we're live, or was that for...
No, it was fine. Somebody commented the case against Times New Roman. It's too much. It's all just too much, John.
Yeah. I don't even know what to say. All right, everyone who's streaming with us, we have 40 people right now streaming, and I think that number's going to grow as we do the podcast. I promised everyone that we would talk a little bit about the issues that have gone on over the last 2 weeks, but I think they really intensified at the end of last week. AD's obviously been involved in this on the Twitter fight. My wife is very grateful that I don't have Twitter right now, because I'd probably be tweeting, but I've seen a lot of what's transpired. And AD, you may not know this, but earlier today, I went over the articles G3 put out there against Christian nationalism, and just gave my 2 cents on those. And I think we should be clear about the goal that we have in doing this and going through what's happened to explain it to people and then what our concerns are. So number one, I mean, I would love to see peace, obviously. I think you would love to see peace too, right, AD?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I've been calling for it.
Yeah. So we would love to have G3 guys who are making some of the statements that they're making, talk to Stephen Wolf, William Wolf, either of us, anyone who can maybe help clarify things. And I think it's important for people to know that olive branches have been extended. The only person I've in G3's orbit that I've reached out to is Scott O'Neill, and I invited him on the podcast and stuff. That's obviously, that hasn't happened. I was hoping William Wolf would be on here, but he's not here yet. I know he's reached out. AD, I know you've reached out. I don't know if you want to say anything about that.
Yeah. I mean, I'll just say that I've had a few conversations behind the scenes, one with Virgil that I don't want to really talk about, one with an undisclosed party. And then I've even actually recently had a conversation with Michael O'Fallon that I probably won't share the details on that either. But I mean, there are conversations happening to some degree. Is it leading to results?
Are they productive is the question, is it up for debate? Yeah. Are they productive? Is there a willingness? So I said on the podcast earlier today, I don't know if you agree with this, AD, but one of the issues that's going on with G3 people, and I'm using that term just because the articles are on the G3 website and it's people in that orbit who are making a lot of these claims. It's not so much the issues as much as it is, I think, the way people feel about it, the attitude that we feel like we've been talked down to for years, and then we lost all faith in institutions in 2020. And now we feel like we're living again what we lived in like 2018, 2019, 2020, that the people that we trusted are, they're not listening, or they're using the same tactics against us. I mean, I've heard you articulate some of these things. I think that's the frustration. Clarity right now and humility are probably two of the things that I'm not saying this for just G3, but all of us, that we need like a lot of. But from my point of view, and AD, correct me if I'm wrong, it's been mostly people on our side of the fence who have been trying to reach out and make some progress in this direction. I don't know if I see the same thing happening on the other side.
I'll say this. I don't know about what's happening behind the scenes, so I can't really comment on that. You know what I mean? I would say, though, that publicly it's pretty clear that there's one side that simply will not have this discussion, at least right now. And that's what they keep saying, you know, not right now. Let us put our little articles out there and stuff like that. But the problem is that they've been putting lots of stuff out there and just refusing to engage pretty much at all beyond what you were mentioning, John, sort of the typical sort of, you know, accusations and innuendo and stuff like that. So, yeah, like, I don't want to say that behind the scenes, like, none of that's going on. I don't think that's necessarily true, but definitely publicly.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. And that's, well, okay. So, and my view is limited, but that's the, I would say that's the perception that I think people who are
sure
on our side of this, that's sure how they feel. They feel like they've looked up to some of these guys, and now these mm-hmm guys are attacking Christendom, Christian cultural Christianity. It's not even just Christian yeah nationalism. I have
right
people texting me who are telling me, John, I don't even know about Christian nationalism. I never read the book. I'm not on board this, but
right,
I feel like now I'm a Christian nationalist because I'm not with those guys. That's sure happening. And I don't know how much it's happening, but it's definitely happening.
Oh, it's happening quite a bit. I mean, I've had a number of conversations, and then there's some that I just can't get to because I just, you know, don't have time to talk to everybody. But yeah, and there's tons of conversations that start just like that. I don't even know what Christian nationalism is all about, but I do know that, like, dunking on Christian culture in 2023, when the alternative is tranny culture, really doesn't make any sense at all. And it doesn't.
Yeah. Yeah. That, I just had a conversation a few minutes ago with someone about that. Yeah. He said, look, we're in a situation. I just got an email too from Rosaria Butterfield, who said, I'm going to be at the Capitol tomorrow in North Carolina, and we're going to be protesting the transgender surgery stuff. And like, mm-hmm, that's where it's at. That's like this. That's what Christian nationalists want to see, but we can work together. I think you made a video absolutely on that. We can work together with people who they are not on board with everything, but like, we have a long way to go in just about any state before you can implement anything close to what we had even at the founding of this country.
Well that's so exactly right. And my, that's kind of what the drumbeat of my videos had been, you know. Obviously every now and then I'll put out a funny thing or whatever, but the drumbeat of my videos is, look, we can work together because, you know, right now we need all, you know, we need as much, you know, unity as we can get around just a few issues. Like, there's a few key issues right now that you know, I think we have a lot of unity on, you know, abortion and the tranny stuff. You know, there's other issues. Nobody's saying there's not other issues, but there's like a few things that I think we all agree on that we don't have to necessarily snipe each other because there's not complete agreement on everything. Like, just because A.D. Robles might be in favor of some kind of a blasphemy law in 50 years doesn't mean you can't, you know, be like, oh yeah, you know, let's stop this tranny culture. Let's actually use the weight of law against this. Like, we can do that legitimately. So that's what I've been kind of saying. Like, let's actually work together. Let's actually listen. You don't have to be a Christian nationalist. I've never said anyone needs to be one. John, I think you said in your most recent video that you don't even use the term for yourself.
I don't. That's, yeah,
this is totally fine. I don't have any problem with that. But you know, they clearly have a problem with it. They're going to go clearly that for it.
Yeah. So what I thought would be helpful, since our goal is to clarify and then to share concerns. So hopefully we can make some progress. And I hope people from G3 are listening, or, hey, if anyone in the comments from G3 wants to post a comment, I'll, you know, give me the email. I'll send you the link. You can hop on right now and we'll talk. Definitely. We want that. So anyway, why don't we do that? Why don't we go through, just for the people who aren't on Twitter, kind of what's happened. And I know Eddie might make fun of me here. You said I love these things. It's so true. It's like Glenn Beck's chalkboard. Like, every episode he had to have a chalkboard, and I have to have a PowerPoint. So
I wish I could show you, like, the way I take notes. It's just a disaster. Like, I can't show you these because some of them are private, but like, yeah, anyway, continue.
All right. So, AD, feel free to hop in anytime you want. Yeah. But this is going to be the story. And these are just the high points. I mean, I had to I had to sift through so much stuff and delete so much stuff. This all started, from my view, AD, I don't know if you agree, like April 17th, April 18th, Josh Bice, mostly, but others got involved in this. And even before that, April 15th, was saying all kinds of like odd stuff. Like he was saying things like he's putting polls out there. How many of my Christian friends would be in support of a Protestant Pope? My Christian nationalism questions are purposeful. So today I'd like to know any of my Twitter friends would support integralism, which is a Roman Catholic social theory. And so he's associating with that. And then, you know, Timon Klein asks him about that. And his response is like, what is integralism? Like, define it. And he says, how about a direct question for you? Do you support integralism? Which I'm like scratching my head. I'm like, I don't understand. Like, we haven't even defined our terms and we're doing this. Like trying to determine where people line up based on a label, but not a concept. Right. So anyway, a bunch of guys, Owen Strand started to say some things. Gabe Hughes said some things, and you know, and then Scott O'Neill, I thought he took the cake a little bit with this tweet where someone was asking about the Plymouth Colony, since they founded it for the glory of God, and Scott O'Neill says it's unbiblical.
Right. Right.
So this all culminates, I think, in one of Stephen Wolfe's reactions, because we didn't even know this was about Stephen Wolfe yet. We kind of, I think, assumed it was. But Stephen Wolfe asks Josh, are you responding to actual arguments or the arguments of your imagination? Like, he's just, I don't understand, like, what are you even talking about? Because he's like, I don't talk about this in my book. So, like, who are you talking about?
Yep.
So that's where this whole thing starts. Well,
and let me just jump in here. So every one of these tweets represents them being educated on this. So when Josh Bice puts out this poll, how many of my Christian friends would be in support of a Protestant Pope? People are voting, of course, but then they're also saying, hey, Josh, you know, this is the thing. Like, we actually don't want a Protestant Pope. You know what I mean? Like, that's not part of it. That's not part of what we believe. So, like, you know, maybe tomorrow don't post about the Protestant Pope. And every single time someone from G3 would again post about the Protestant Pope. And so each one of these things is just they're putting this information out there and people are explaining to them very calmly and carefully. And like, for example, the Gabe Hughes and Owen Strawn here, where they're saying it's terrible that Stephen Wolfe isn't exegeting the text in this book. And I saw, you know, multiple comments that said, hey, you know, this isn't that kind of a book. This is more of a historical, you know, theory book. It's not really about exegeting the text. And so, you know, yeah, you might think it sounds stupid to just assume the Reformed tradition, but that's what this book is about. Like, if you don't like that, that's okay. But it's totally legitimate to write a book that's not an exegetical book as a Christian. That's legitimate. And so they're in, with all these tweets, I just want to make sure people know that people were engaging with them in good faith. We're not really into integralism. That's not really what it's about. Let's move on to something else. You know what I mean? That's how it went down.
Well, I know even in like chat threads and stuff, people were trying to figure out what was going on. They're saying, do you think this is just ignorance? Is that what's going on?
Sure.
And ignorance, of course, can be fixed easily. You just have a conversation and say, that's not what I mean. And that's, I think, the stage that some of these tweets represent. I will say this too. This kind of came out of nowhere. Like Stephen's book, I've never seen a book in Christianity more universally hated in my lifetime than Stephen Wolfe's book. I mean, it's like every single outlet had to do a critique, but most of these critiques were coming from the left. And we just kind of rolled our eyes. We're like, yeah, these are woke guys. And now it's more, it's guys who, like, these guys signed the statement on social justice. Some of them headed that up. So it's not just, you know, quote unquote, like the hard woke guys, although we might get to that in a minute, whether this some of the stuff is woke or not. But I think, like, when Stephen first came out with his book, G3 could have done reviews like everyone else was doing. It took a while, and then it was all at once. And it started with these, like, I don't know, AD, if this makes sense to you, but I watched a lot of Westerns growing up, right? And I immediately thought of the scout. You know, the scout always goes out ahead of the army, the cavalry, to see if there's any, like, Indian tribes or something. And I immediately thought of that. When I was putting this together, I was like, these are like scouting tweets, and I don't want to put motives in anyone's, like, I don't know what people are thinking, but like, you know, it's seeing what the response is going to be almost.
Sure.
Cause there weren't any
waters,
articles yet.
So to speak.
Testing it. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that was the beginning. Well, then Stephen puts this tweet out, and it basically says white evangelicals are the lone bulwark against moral insanity in America. We've talked about it. AD's talked about it. It was a whole thread. It wasn't one tweet, but Everyone lost their mind about this.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of examples. Canon Press, you know, was saying things, even his own publisher, Scott O'Neill, Exhibit A for why some of us are concerned about Christian nationalism. Virgil Walker, Owen Strand, like a lot of these guys were just taking shots at it.
You're seeing is a visceral emotional reaction. None of this is, they're not thinking at all. This is just a reaction. They might like to think that they're very reasonable and rational, but these are emotional reactions. There's no doubt about it. Like I said, I've had conversations behind the scenes. This is emotion coming out.
Yeah. Yeah. Pure and simple. I mean, even some of the mocking things, I know some people are upset with lower level accounts or anonymous accounts making memes. But like you have like in this, like Virgil Walker saying things like, you know, I'm glad that somebody saw fit to come get their boy to Canon Press when they said it was dumb. And I'm like, yep. Well, you know, that's mocking. Right. So,
sure.
And I think a little mocking's okay now and then. I'm 100%, not against 100%. That. Yeah. But it's weird though, that like the aggression, was coming from that side. And now that as we progress, we'll show it's kind of the winds are blowing in the opposite direction. It's like, hey, brother, we got to be nice to one another. Now we got like, that's what I don't understand, that like lack of sense of proportion and lack of awareness. So that happens. And then there's reaction to Stephen. And I don't know that Stephen, like, I don't know if he did anything like that would have been noticed. I'm not sure. Or like the question I've had is like, was this already in momentum? And then Stephen just happened to do this tweet that something was going to be made out of it anyway, or was this the perfect storm? And I don't know, but Stephen has another tweet where he says, you don't need to wait for revival to re-Christianize the institutions when a strong-willed and resolute minority is enough, which politically, again, is 100% true. Look at what happened.
Nothing controversial. Yeah.
There's nothing controversial, Dan. There's a cultural Christianity is enough. I mean, I watched the gay marriage thing. I watched that go from the majority, vast majority was against it, to now you can't even talk about it without losing your job. Right.
And how it happened was with a gay culture. Like, our culture is gay. It's as gay as it can be.
That's right.
And so, lots of people that don't care about homosexual marriage at all, like as far as they're concerned, you know, they don't care. They probably don't really want to hang around lots of, transsexuals and stuff like that. But most people are just like, I guess we're doing the gay thing now. And, you know, they're going to go and watch football on Sunday. Who cares? Like that's what this was about. Like, you don't have to be like anyone who thinks we have like 60% or 50% like zealous LGBT supporters is out of their mind. That's not how it is. It's like, I don't know what the numbers are, but it's very small percentage are like totally into the LGBT thing. But yet, everything's gay now.
Here we are. And Christians can do that in areas where they still have some
100%
cultural. Yeah, you know, like it's very different living in Virginia, where I lived, and living in New York. And I'm sure you've lived other places, AD, where,
oh yeah,
like in New York, I couldn't pass a Sabbatarian law right now. But guess what? There's still blue laws on the books in some southern like counties. So all right. So that was the second thing. And then everyone lost their mind again. And this was, I think, the moment when I was starting this. Like, yeah. I at this point, I was like, okay, this seems just very purposeful to me. Like, I don't think it's ignorance anymore. Like those were the thoughts, at least, I was having, because I didn't know how to make sense of it. Because like everyone's tweeting against cultural Christianity now. I shouldn't say everyone. I put a few representative examples. I could have put more, but
this was the moment when you realized that these people were hammers looking for a nail. Like they didn't. They were going to find something. They were out for blood, because that comment about cultural Christianity, it's so obvious what he's talking about. And they all turned it into like, who cares about the gospel, basically?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. We're trying to somehow Christianize without the gospel, without repentance and faith. And I'm like, where in the world are they? I'm like rereading the tweet. I'm trying to figure it out. So I don't know if we need to read all these. I'll just read. Let's read. Owen Strawn says, you can't have your cake and eat it too. You can't say I'm not doing exegesis because I'm not a theologian. Oh, I've already read that one. That wasn't the one I wanted to read. Let me read this one. By the way, there is no such thing as cultural Christianity. It's not a viable form of Christianity. It's certainly not found in scripture. Cultural Christianity does not exist in any positive form. I don't mean to be disrespectful, but I can't it's the clown shoes thing that I guess you were posting. I'm like, in any positive, like, there's literally been no form of cultural Christianity ever in all of history that so
no.
No, apparently not.
You know, Owen has spoken. I mean, I don't know what to say about that.
I don't either. But these are the things that I can't make sense of. Scott O'Neill said, fundamentally, a nation can't be Christian unless every citizen is a professing Christian and or a Christian king is physically ruling that nation with a rod of iron. And like, this is like what every country before, like 150 years ago, every Western European country, even Eastern European countries, even some African countries would all have said, we're Christian. Like, and then no one thought like that was against the gospel or that was like, but these, there seems to be like a hang up with calling a nation Christian.
It boggles my mind. I mean, you could, there's so many ways to retort this. I mean, this guy Rorschach here is asking, does it apply to church, family, ministry? What about Israel? Not all of Israel are true Israel. That was true back when Israel first became Israel. Were they still Israel? Of course they were still Israel, even though not everyone of Israel was truly in Israel. Everyone right. gets this. They were all circumcised. They were all Israel. They're all the nation of Israel. Obviously they weren't all devoted to the Lord, but everyone understands. It's so stupid to even talk about this because everyone gets it. Like, we all know that when we say, oh yeah, we're a Christian family, I'm not saying literally every Robles that's ever existed is a Christian.
Right.
Everybody gets that unless you're talking about Christian nationalism. And then you say dumb things. And here's Scott is saying, no, you can't call a family a Christian family unless there's everyone is a professing Christian or a Christian ministry. G3 is not a Christian ministry because I can't be sure that everyone is a Christian.
I didn't even think of that. That's a good
one.
Am I even sure?
Like, and maybe G3 is small, right? G3 is small, yeah. But let's look at a big ministry. You know, Lifeway. Is Lifeway a Christian bookstore? Does that even exist anymore? I don't know. But is it a Christian bookstore? Well, I don't know. How could a bookstore be Christian? Because, I mean, is every worker a Christian? Yeah. Is every checkout girl a Christian? This is a stupid way to think. Like, this is not how we normally think. This is how you think when you're being very emotional and you really want to find a nail to hammer down.
Yeah, I mean, and yeah, obviously you can't say there's a Christian church by that standard.
Right, of course. I mean, not everyone that goes to your church is a professing Christian. Some people go that are unbelievers that are there just to hear the message. So I guess you're no longer a Christian church either.
Yeah. So here's Montana Viking said this earlier. He said, I think G3 has a valid concern calling those who are unregenerate regenerate, and it's nothing new. Dr. Martin Lloyd-Jones objected to Christian nationalism for the same exact reason, though I don't think Martin Lloyd-Jones, well... they didn't have Christian nationalism in the sense that we're thinking of, but some people are thinking this, AD. They really do think that what's happening is people on the Christian nationalist side are calling those who are unregenerate regenerate. I haven't seen any of that, though. There's no primary source I can point to. I'm not sure why that's being said over and over.
Yeah, I'm not sure either. I don't think that's a legitimate concern at all, just to be honest. I don't think that that's actually happening. To identify a nation as Christian, as far as, like, again, in the normal usage of language, you know, you call an entity a Christian because we operate the way a Christian entity of that nature should operate. So in my family, we're a Christian family because I operate it and I rule it and I reign it as a Christian. And so I do Christian things with my wife and my kids and, you know, the organization's Christian. And the same thing would be for a country. It's a Christian nation because we run it the way Christians ought to run a country. This does not say anything about the regenerate or non-regenerate status of any individual or group of individuals. It's just how you run the country. You do it according to the Bible, basically, according to the laws of Christ.
One of the tweets that got a lot of traction, I have to mention, though, is Scott O'Neill. I think this might be the time I emailed him because I was like, we need to have a conversation here. He put, yes, he's responding to someone, but he says, he makes this comment in his response. I want as many Christians as possible in public office, which great, right? I do too. Not so they can enforce Christian law, but so that they can prevent pagans from enforcing pagan law. I don't know. So there was a debate about whether or not God, like moral laws are Christ's laws. That, like, I guess that's the distinction. Like, you could have moral laws that apply to everyone, and then you have Christ's laws or the, I guess that's the second table or something. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm trying to make sense of it. I'm not getting a good explanation. Do you understand this?
This is the kind of thing that I was about to say, like, you know, these tweets really desperately cry out for, hey, maybe you should have chatted with one of us first to think this one through, because, you know, like, I've got so many questions, like, so they're just literally just there to, like, play defense. They're like, so what laws are there? Like, if they're stopping the pagans from doing pagan law, what laws remain? Like, what are these laws that are not Christian, but they're not pagan either? What are those? And what do you call them? What are you basing them on? Because I would argue that he would, and I think he would say this, you base them on God's morality, right?
Right.
Right.
And he who's said God? That. I think he said that. Yeah.
Right. But who's God? It's Christ. So right. They're Christian laws. They're Christ's laws, you know, and there you go. I mean, I don't see where the disconnect is, but again, this could have used a little bit of thinking through, in my opinion.
Well, we're not, these aren't like lower level Twitter accounts. Like no. People need to realize this is, we would not be talking about this.
This is the VP of whatever from G3 Ministries.
Yeah. That's what it is. I think he's like the second in command or whatever of the G3, which I'm sure. And I think Scott's a music guy, if I'm not mistaken, and I'm sure he has wonderful music, and I'm sure there's wonderful things. I know there's wonderful things G3 has put out there. Great materials.
Sure.
But I guess the disappointment for me, and I know this is going to sound harsh, AD, I don't know if you've said this before about this, but the root concern I have is a hermeneutical one, actually, because Stephen's book is fairly new. It's written in English. I think it's fairly understandable. If you're educated, especially, it should be understandable. He uses some big words, but okay, get a dictionary. If you can't, as someone who is a ministry leader training, I guess, essentially, you are training men for ministry. You are training them how to interpret the Bible,
sure,
which is in an ancient language, which is actually in some places harder to understand. And you can't interpret just a basic book. That, I guess, that's a concern for me. Like, I hold these guys to a higher standard, I think, in my mind, that they could interpret that. And
yeah, I mean, has Scott read the book? I don't know. I'm not trying to zing him. I don't know if he has.
Yeah. Maybe he hasn't. I don't know. I don't know if he's. Well, he went after Stephen in his blog, and he was quoting Stephen all over the place.
Got it.
And
okay, so he probably has.
He made out like he did.
But even if he hadn't, I mean, this is not like Stephen didn't invent that idea that, you know, the civil governing authorities' laws, you know, should be definitely based on something. So you have to base that on God's moral law.
Well, I mean, we have a tweet.
Every major confession said it. I mean, like, this is not, you know, anyway, go ahead.
No, we have a tweet, though, is what I'm saying. It's not even like, you don't have to read his book. You just have to read this tweet. That's all you have to do. That's what I'm saying. These are all reactions against that tweet.
Like,
if you can't interpret this tweet, I just have a hard time with how do you interpret the word of God. That's all I'm saying.
Right. That's
so
fair.
Yeah. Oh, I don't know what happened with my font there. Oh no, my font.
No, this is not good.
This is not good. We should just delete this whole video right now. I'm gonna get in trouble for that. Anyway, associations. I tried to catalog some of what I thought were the biggest. So we already talked about misrepresentations in the beginning, but this came up, AD, and I'll just let you speak to this because you were like tagged in it and directly involved. There's been like a purity test, an associational purity test of some kind. I wanted to give, I want to give Tom the benefit of the doubt. Tom Buck, who's, he hasn't been as involved as the others, but he came out with this. And I think what he's told others is that he's trying to give you an opportunity to clarify, but he liked Virgil Walker's tweet. So he says, I sincerely hope some of the prominent proponents of Christian nationalism would publicly denounce this. It's this guy, Corey Mahler, who says interracial marriage is tantamount to murder. And then Virgil Walker jumps in there, and Tom likes the tweet, saying, I could care less if they denounce it. I'm not surprised that Stephen Wolf follows this guy. My warning stands. And then you had Scott O'Neill this morning, after all of the dust I thought had settled, retweeting it and just I don't like Corey Mahler. Well, I should let you talk, AD, because I'm Corey's not representative of anything in our circles. But anyway,
no, let me say this. So By the way, I'll say that I'm supposed to be talking to Tom on Wednesday. So good. I'm sure this will come up. That conversation was scheduled prior to this, but I'm sure this will come up at some point.
I'm glad you guys are talking.
Yeah, yeah. So I would never ordinarily answer a tweet like this. This is so dumb. It is so dumb. And it's dumb in Tom's case, too. It displays such a lack of savvy. I can't even. It boggles my mind. I believe him, though, that he didn't have any nefarious purposes. Normally, this kind of a tweet to get you to try to denounce something that it's patently obvious that you're not a part of. Usually that's a tactic to smear you. I believe Tom that it wasn't. And Tom has built up a catch of trust with me, which is the only reason I even considered answering it. So I did answer it. And it's ridiculous that it's come to this. You know what I mean? This isn't helping. On our call, I'm going to ask him, don't involve me in this kind of thing again, because I will never answer it again. But the thing is, like, this kind of denunciation game, this kind of like struggle session thing, we all knew that was a scam like 6 months ago. But now one side of this debate is using this scam. And that's what I want to call out. Like this, like Tom knows better. He knows what a struggle session is. He knows this kind of thing is used as a tactic, and usually it's very nefarious. I believe him that he wasn't doing anything, you know, to try to hurt me. But like this is my thing. It's like we all of a sudden forgot everything the woke church did to us previously, and now we're doing it to our brothers. I don't get that.
Well, one of the things that I noticed right off the bat with this is the association is made even by asking the question.
That's the point, one of the problems. Usually. Yeah.
Yeah. Just
that's usually the point. They want me to be on, like they want me to be associated with maybe AD might not be against this statement that says interracial marriage is tantamount to murder, because he was credibly accused after all. And to be honest, it's worse that it's Tom Buck, in my opinion, because Tom Buck is more reasonable than some of these other guys. He hasn't been acting like this, like Scott has, or like Josh has in the last few weeks. He hasn't been. So for Tom to have this question, the accusation is that much stickier. Now, I don't really care about this accusation, because I've got like five or six people telling me to denounce, you know, interracial marriages tantamount to murder type tweets, and I'm ignoring them because I don't care. But it just sucks to have it. And sorry if this is a Baptist audience, I can't use that word, but it's not fun to have it, you know, be a guy that's like on your team do this to you. And again, I don't think he'd had a nefarious purpose, but the lack of savvy here is, it's hard to fathom, in my opinion. He knows he 6 months ago, he would never have done this.
Yeah.
Why now?
Yeah. One person makes a testing Bruin made a good point. Honestly, a lot of these issues could be avoided and resolved if we follow the principle of quick to hear and slow to speak, which I couldn't agree more. I do want people to know that this was scheduled last week for this Monday. And one of the reasons I was traveling, but I actually said, I think we can cool off over the weekend. And this has been going on already for over 2 weeks. So I was a little late in starting to respond to it, but now at this point, like, I think enough has been said. Yeah. And, you know, this whole struggle session thing, and I think that is the right word for it, is extremely disappointing to me. It creates this impression. And then people think that you must approve if you don't play the game and denounce it. And Corey Mahler, I don't know how much you know about him, AD. I did not know a lot about him until, like, I don't know, maybe a month ago. Funny enough, not in relationship to this. In the Missouri, the Lutheran, what do they call it? The Missouri Synod Lutherans.
Yeah, yeah.
Corey Mahler, I guess, was just excommunicated from the Missouri
Synod. Just recently, I think. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, he's been in that process, I think, for a little while. But he has no position. He has no position. And I had read a statement from the president of the denomination on a podcast like a few months ago. And I was critiquing because the president was saying, like, we got this problem with these white supremacists, these neo-Nazis, these like, he's just like crazy. And it was Corey Mahler. I'm like, who is Corey Mahler? And I just like, I was skeptical that there was even a guy like that, but okay, there is a guy like that. It's Corey.
There's a guy like that. What was so funny about this was, I'm sorry to interrupt you.
Yeah, no,
what was so funny about this is that I had that guy blocked. So I had to unblock him to see what tweet Tom was referring to. And the reason I had him blocked is because I've been on a blocking tear lately. And I had found out about this Corey guy, I'm pretty sure, literally the day before. I had never heard his name before. And so I found out who he was. I was like, I don't want to see that nonsense. So I blocked it. And it's just the whole, it's like, apparently this guy is like well known by all the Christian nationalists. I'd never heard of him. And, you know, and
I didn't,
like, it's just insane. Like, this is just so insane that it came to this. But let me just say this. I'm not saying that Corey didn't deserve to be excommunicated, but I wonder when the last time they excommunicated someone who was pro-gay or pro-abortion. I'm just curious. I don't know the answer.
Well, I was going to say with the LCMS, they have an issue because their catechism commentary that they came out with a few months ago had some like pro-gay stuff in it. And yeah. it's creating an issue in the denomination. Yep. And the president kind of associated these things. Like we have people critiquing this and I read the statement. I know people are saying, go back and read it. I read it again. And yeah, like this Corey guy, like he's bringing the whole denomination to their knees. And I happen to know, and I can't get into details, but this is being used in the same way Tom used it. This Corey Mahler guy.
Of course.
In local churches, guys who won't denounce Corey strong enough. Maybe they've done a podcast with them or they've, you know, sure. they've communicated with them, whatever. There's some association there. And they didn't denounce him strong enough, even if they disagree. That's becoming grounds for disciplinary processes. And that's unbelievable to me.
That's absolutely insane. That's absolutely insane. And again, I'm not saying Corey didn't. I don't know anything about this man. Maybe, I don't know what he's done. I don't know what sins they've charged against him. I don't know if he's deserved to be excommunicated or not. I'm assuming he did. He doesn't seem like a very pleasant guy. So let's just give that a benefit of the doubt. But this whole strategy of like denounce him kind of thing, like, again, I don't think Tom did it in this way, but that's the standard reason this strategy is employed. In fact, you know, I'm not going to be honest, like the next day, I'm pretty sure Virgil kind of insinuated that now Stephen's guilty because he follows him. So I guess he doesn't denounce him because he follows him.
Like, oh, yeah, he did. I don't have that one up there. I don't think.
It's already kind of devolved to that. That might be. Can you pull up that last screen, John? The one that had Tom's tweet to me.
This one here. Yeah. Is that one?
Yeah. Yeah. Here he is. It's right here. I'm not surprised Stephen Wolf follows this guy. My warning stands. There it is right there.
Oh, okay.
It's like so.
And Tom liked that tweet.
Virgil got the signal of what this was about. He did. And the thing is, like, I'm not saying that Tom was playing that game, but Virgil seems to think he is.
Right.
And yeah. So again, Virgil knew about the struggle session. He knows about it now. I'm sure he's denounced it before. But what's all this? It's like, again, it's like, I'm not offended by this. Like, listen, my name is associated with all kinds of evil stuff because people have lied about me quite a bit on the internet. I'm okay with that. That if I didn't like that, I would stop being on the internet. You know what I mean?
Right, right.
I'm okay with all of this. So it's not the fact that someone tried a struggle session with me. It's the fact that Tom Buck did. And Virgil Walker is apparently down with it. And everyone who likes that tweet, oh, yeah, I mean, Steven's following him.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not surprised. I mean, he's one of those guys after all.
Yeah. Yeah. That's kind of disgusting. And I did a podcast.
It's totally disgusting. It's absolutely disgusting.
Earlier, you can go check out. I talked about that whole piece Virgil wrote. And he's trying to say he's not saying that people are racist, that Steven's a racist. He's a ethno-nationalist, and he's making these distinctions. They're not using the term racist. They're using the term ethno-nationalist.
That's a very strategic thing. Yeah, that actually does show a little bit of savvy, because Virgil knows full well that racist doesn't mean anything. Nobody cares.
Right.
Ethnocentrist sounds pretty scary, though. And I'll agree. It does. It sounds scary.
Sounds like a Nazi. Yeah, it's going to come bust down your 100%. Door. You're not.
So there's some savvy here. It's savvy in the wrong way.
Yeah. But under the way that he treats Stephen's quotes, though, I read on the podcast earlier quotes from George Washington. And I was like, you would have to make George Washington out to be a proto-Nazi. Like anyone who had probably lived just about most people before like 1850 would have been, or 1900 would have been proto-Nazis. Well, we got to get to some of the, we'll finish this, but let's get to, there's a bunch of people who have Berean Babes has been waiting. Violet. Hey, Violet.
What up?
Can you turn your...
Sorry. Can you guys hear me?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Hi, guys. Thank you for having this discussion. You did say that William was going to be here, but I'll still ask the question because I think he would be best to answer the question. So I wrote down the questions that I want to ask, okay? So I think, AD, you can answer one of the questions. Okay. Question one that I have. Do you see why the term Christian nationalism is tied to being the woke right and associated with racism? Even if people cannot redeem the term woke, why do you guys think that Christian nationalism can be redeemed if that's your position? Then another question that I have, why does it seem that you are purposefully being contentious or belittling, not being charitable with your brothers, especially when it comes to the disagreement on Twitter or even what happened with the font situation? Because I think the principle behind the font, I do think that was not wise.
Okay.
Cool. I can answer the second one, John, but if you want to take the first one, because I don't think I'm the right guy for that.
Well, I might be with Violet a little bit on this. Like, I've had a hard time with redeeming the term in a way, just because I know the baggage it has, and I know 100 years ago it was used by socialists who call themselves Christian nationalists as a way to subvert. And so I've been a little skeptical. I think Stephen's argument, because Stephen's aware of that, is that it's kind of like, you know, where right wingers or conservatives will take terms, because the left has the biggest bullhorn, that there's no way to stop that right this second. They just do. So in what we need to do, some conservatives think, is we take their terms, like they call us deplorables, and we're like, yeah, we're a deplorable, you know, we start taking things that they've said against us, and we're mocking them. Right. Stephen, I think because it's scholarly, it doesn't seem as mocking. It's like he took the term and he says in the beginning of the book that he doesn't want to talk about fascism. He basically is taking this term, appropriating for his own definition, and he gives you that definition. Mm-hmm. That's a prudence thing. That's a tactic thing. And as AD pointed out at the beginning, I'm not the most comfortable with the term. I just don't really have a great substitute for what we're like. You could try to say we're constitutional. What does that mean anymore? You could say, there's no term I can use that's going to like communicate anything, because all the words have been destroyed. So Stephen's trying to craft something here and build something. And I think that's a fair critique, but it's a prudential critique. That's not a principled critique. You're not saying you're wrong or you're evil. Sure. You're just saying like, oh, it's not a wise term to use. Let's use a different one. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I do get it. I mean, the term, if it didn't have the baggage it comes with, it's actually a good term. Like, wouldn't you want a nation to be a Christian nation? Of course I would want to be a nation to be a Christian nation, right? My eschatology goes to that direction. But if you just say Christian nationalism, even now how you have these people who've come out on Twitter, they say they're Christian nationalism and they're Christians, but the stuff they're pretty much saying, like, you know, the stuff they, you know, calling out names or Owen Strand or what's his name, Samia say, you know, there is no way anybody would be associating with that. But now it's like every time you have to pass up. And sometimes when you say Christian nationalism, people, they're automatically thinking about MAGA. There's so many things that's coming with it. It's kind of like a rainbow, right? When I see somebody wearing a rainbow, I'm not thinking about Noah, okay? I'm not thinking about the promise. I'm just thinking, oh, there she is. That's an ally. Yeah. You see what I'm saying? But I know what the scripture teaches about the rainbow. So it's almost like, okay, whether we like it or not, they have taken over the rainbow. I'm not looking, it only has 7 colors. I don't do that. You wear a rainbow, you know what I mean? You belong to a certain camp.
Of course.
You tell me you're Christian nationalism, so I automatically put you in a different camp. At the same time, it's just like, okay, you know, you're Presbyterian, right? Like, you know, you're sprinkling babies. I don't think people should be sprinkling babies, but you're a brother in Christ. We can, you know, do things together. But I'm seeing that with Christian nationalism, it's like, if you're not in the camp of Christian nationalism, you are automatically an enemy. I am for agreement, like when the separation happened with the social justice warriors, right? It was clear cut. It was undermining a scripture. But now, Christian nationalism now is just like, so now every time you're checking, like, okay, which label are you? Is this one a racist? Or is it, I don't know, like, if it's helping.
You mentioned Presbyterians. Like, you know how many Presbyterians in the area AD and I live are total heretics? You know, the vast majority of people who call themselves Presbyterians. And I don't want to be associated with them. But I don't want to be associated with Baptists in this area either. So, you know, I go past the Presbyterian church as a rainbow flag and a Ukrainian flag, and that's it. And and their rainbow isn't about the flood.
Yeah. The rainbow flag is there in for the sake of the promise of Noah.
Well, it's got like a V in it, and intersex circle, and yeah, so it's the thing is, though, like, yeah, anyone can like co-opt a term or use a different term. And
can I just say something, John? Like,
yeah, go ahead.
At some point, you gotta draw a line in the sand somewhere, because these guys do have a huge megaphone, right? And so, you know, they're gonna slander literally any kind of Christian political action, and right now, any kind of Christian political action is called the Christian nationalist, and they're gonna associate that with all kinds of baggage. And of course, you know, there is some that's legitimate there, as John was pointing out. Some of it's not legitimate, but eventually, you can't let your enemy dictate what you call yourself, because especially when they're in control of all the megaphones right now, and it's not all of them, but most of them. Christian nationalists, yeah. I think I'm willing to take it, because the term itself, both of those words are completely fine. I like both of those words. If there's another term that's better, I'm totally down. I'm not dedicated to the term. I don't think anyone needs to call themselves a Christian nationalist. I don't really care. Even if you're against calling yourself a Christian nationalist, as long as you're doing the stuff and they're Christian in politics, I'm down with that. But the thing is, you got to draw on the line of sand, because they're never going to let you have your terms. And before you know it, you're going to be down to one term, Christian. And then that's going to be associated with racism and whatever the rest of it is as well. And are you going to shed that? I mean, I think some people might, but you got to draw a line in the sand somewhere. You know what I mean? You'll never, ever be able to control anything if you let your opponents dictate the terms.
What about that second question, AD?
Oh, so the second question, that was about disrespectful engagement, stuff like that.
Yes. Like, you know, especially on Twitter, and then like the font situation that we that took place, because I think
the font,
know,
right?
They purposefully copied the Christian social justice. So to me, I'm like, if sure. we are serious about having this discussion, why are we intentionally doing that? To me, I think that's undercutting the message. So it's almost like I'm sitting here. So now, like, okay, so why was that necessary?
I wasn't involved in that in any way, so I don't know what their thinking was. I think they said that they were doing it in homage to the statement on Christianity and social justice. I believe them. I don't have any reason not to. Was it necessary? I mean, that's a hard question to answer. It's not necessary, obviously. But
your tweet, the tweet you tweeted out asking for a statesman to say something about the font.
I'm not sure which one you're talking about. I like that they did that. So I was appreciative of it. Yeah.
So you don't mind that they use the font copying what happened with the social justice statement?
No.
Why wouldn't, like, so, okay, that's fine. If you're entitled to have that position. So to me, sure. I'm seeing doing something like that, it's making the other, I have questions for G3, but they're not here. So would it make sense to be asking you about
this? This is a legitimate question.
Yeah. So, but to me, if you're doing something like that, if I'm sitting there, I'm a G3, I'm not going to take you guys serious, because I'm thinking you guys are playing games
instead of us
a serious conversation.
That's great. No, but the thing is, so this is what I'll say about that.
Can I just say one thing for those who don't know what we're talking about? Because we haven't gotten there yet.
That's a very good point.
There was
this
a statement,
unless you know,
there was a statement put out this morning called, what was it called? Christian nationalism in the gospel. And what Violet's saying is that they used a font and the term and the gospel at the end of it was
the whole aesthetic.
The whole aesthetic of it looked a bit like the statement on social justice on the gospel. So this was a complaint Josh Bice had about it. Why are you using that font? Because it makes it seem like there's an association there. So, all right. Sorry. Go ahead, AD.
Right. So yeah, the statement comes out, and like within a few minutes, there, you know, G3 is saying that, you know, this is inappropriate and some kind of problem with that. But here's the thing. So like, I think that, and this is a general comment about all of the memes, right? I can take responsibility for my memes and some of the comments that I've been making, because I've been provoking G3. There's no question about it. I've been provoking them. if you rip all that out of context and you say, well, AD, why are you just provoking them, right? Why do you respond in this disrespectful way? In my opinion, that's ignoring the context of what's actually happened, because that's not all that's happened. What's happened is that, you know, for weeks, John, I think it was even longer than April 15th, but let's just go with your day, April 15th. For a couple of weeks, we're sitting here and getting these weird sort of, you know, kind of cryptic, you know, polls and things about Protestant popes. And I saw one tweet from O'Fallon that kind of insinuated that Christian nationalists think you're saved by the government. And it's just like this stuff that like it's not true. And so what I saw for weeks was responses to that were very respectful, that were like aiming to like sort of like inform, like, hey, you know, we actually don't think that you're saved by the government. You know, what we do think, though, is that the government should be overtly Christian. And of course, you're saved by the gospel and in faith in Christ and everything that we all agree on. And then the next day we get the same thing. And so, you know, we kind of went through that period for multiple cycles where we were seemingly ignored completely. It's like, we told you that we don't believe in the Protestant Pope for 5 days straight. And for 5 days straight, you told us who's going to be the Protestant Pope. So to me, that's insanely disrespectful. And so sometimes if you're in a food fight and you can fight better, you got to do it. And so the memes were there to highlight the insanity of what we had experienced. And so you get the Jordan Peterson meme. So you're saying we're saved by the government, like, you know, that kind of stuff. You get the clown shoes meme, because these arguments they're awful, number one, but then you just keep repeating them after being corrected. And so the memes and the joking, it didn't start that way, but it ended that way, because that's a very effective and powerful tool to use to highlight how silly something is. Now, I could also take, you know, do a 10-point thread about how silly what Scott and Neil said that day was, which is something that someone like Scott would do, but that's not as effective. And so I'm going to do what's as effective as possible. It's not sinful to do it. Scott can respond and talk about how silly I am in a 10-point, you know, thread, but between a meme and a 10-point thread, the meme, I don't make the rules. This is just more effective in our culture. And so I'm going to use the tool that's most effective. And that's kind of what I've been doing. I don't think it's a sign of disrespect. I think it's engaging someone where they're at. And quite frankly, we were at the meme level before the memes even started. They were just memes with only words. Those are terrible memes, by the way.
Yeah.
Okay. So thank you for answering that. So sure. It's you are doing whatever you're doing strategically and you're using the memes.
100%.
I grant that. But the other side, they don't speak the memeology language. They don't understand those things.
So no, they're seeing. Oh, that's a great question. Like, that's a great question.
So what they are seeing is like, okay, we want to sit down on the table with you guys, but you're out here mocking us with these memes and everything else. They don't understand it. So it's like,
this is
you
great.
Are saying something else going left. They're saying something else. People are going right. Now when you guys say you want to sit down, have a discussion with them, to them, they're saying like, why should we sit down with you guys after you've already called us names via the memes?
This is very good.
Violet, thank you for those questions. Yeah, no, those are really, and I wish we could have you on longer. Yes, I really appreciate what you're doing.
But thank you.
But I want AD, to answer that. I just have other folks. We'll see you later.
Yeah. Thank you, guys. Yeah. Yep. You answer. I'll watch and listen.
Okay. We'll answer. Yep.
Yeah. So the question is, I'm doing it strategically, but now G3 is all offended and they won't, you know, not offended, but they just don't think we're serious now. My response to that is they didn't think we were worthy of responding to prior to the memes. That's the whole point. That's why the memes were deployed. And so they already came to us with, you have nothing valuable to say. So we started memeing. And I'm going to be straight up and I'll look into the camera so you know I'm legit. I don't care if G3 comes to the table, if they're going to come to the table the way that they've been acting. I don't care. And so I'd like to come to the table. But here's the reality. You're going to have to come with more than just the nonsense that you've been doing for weeks. And if you're going to let a meme come in the way of that, then clearly you're not going to come without the nonsense that you've been dealing with for weeks. And so I do want to work together. But at the end of the day, like right now, this is about other people besides the G3 people, in my opinion. I don't want to break up with G3. But if it's going to be that way, it's going to be that way. And I've got lots of people that care about what I have to say, and they care about what John has to say, and they care about what Joel has to say, and all this stuff. And it's valuable to show them how clown shoes the other side has been. That's valuable to me. And so I'm going to do that.
You know, one of the things, good points, AD, that Violet brought up that I thought about is the anger or the irritation, the frustration people have with Josh Bice's comment this morning. I don't think was about it. It really is not about fonts. Okay. It's just not. It's that's not the issue. The issue, I think, is, as you said, AD, that this has been going on for weeks and there's this feeling of disrespect and the fact that there was nothing substantive, like there was no. Like it's just like, really, this has been an intense debate and that's what we're going to talk about. Like, you don't have a copyright on a font now, you know, granted, and they changed it, by the way, just so people know, they did change their font. So that
terrible move
within a few hours. Yeah. So, so Violet's concern has already been somewhat alleviated. I think they genuinely thought they were paying homage. And then when Josh did that, they're like, I guess not. Like, where this isn't, they thought it might have been an olive branch or something, and it's not. And so they changed it. And so that's fine. They changed it. But I think people are just like, Josh, really? Like, you're president of G3, and you've been talking about Christian nationalism for weeks and how horrible it is. And now there's a statement clarifying it and the font. And it's just a draft. It's a draft. Yeah. So it was the level of proportion. Straining at Nats.
We do need to talk, but it can't be. It's no longer on their terms. Like, it can't be the way they've been conducting themselves. And again, the memes are very effective and they're in your face, but they were memeing this entire time just with words. And again, these are terrible memes. The poll memes and stuff like that, or the circle eye, the two eyes meme. Scott uses that emoji all the time. That's a meme. It's not a very good one most of the time. Right. You got to pick your spots. And for my money, the person who's picked his spots the best with that emoji is Tom Askell. I've never seen anyone use those eyes better than Tom Askell does. That's a meme, though. So let's not pretend that, like, we started the memeing. We're just better at it, basically.
Yeah. All right, we're going to go to, let's see, we got a bunch of people waiting in the chat here.
Oh, man.
Billy Allred's going to be next, and then Gordon Sanchez. All right. Well, before we do that, though, I feel like we need to show this because I don't know how they do this, AD. I don't know if you have it, but somehow people paying money to chat here.
They're called super chats. Yeah.
Super chats. So we got a super chat from Jesse Tinsley. With the USA being so large and possibly being a country with many nations. Well, I said that earlier today, AD. I think we're an empire with many nations. Would a great amount of our issues be dealt better with a strong implementation of federalism, or is this opposed by many Christian nationalists? That is a super good question. I'll do it first, and then AD, if you want to crack at it. So I happen to think that how do I get the super chat down? Is that the thing with them? Do they just okay? There we go. I'm like, the super chats just stay there.
Nope, nobody ever gives me super chats. No,
I think that's like the second I've gotten, and I've never seen one $20. So thank you, Jesse. You know, if you want federalism, Jesse, you
got
federalism for $20.
$20.
$20. I actually would love to see a return to federalism where we have strong states and local municipalities. I'm a localist. I think that we're one of our big problems is we have a scale problem. There are not enough, or there's actually too many people and not enough representatives for them. So, you know, if you have 10 people, let's say they're going to be represented by one guy, that guy's pretty accountable because you know where he lives. You have a share of his time. If you are one guy representing 1,000 people, not as accountable, you get lost in the crowd. There's barriers to entry. And so I think we're in a place where the central authority is too strong, and it'd be great to get back to a local control of a lot of these things. The Drag Queen Story Hour should be a local and state issue. That's where Christians should fight it. That's where a lot of Christians are fighting it. But there are elements that on the other side, I say the left, they want to make this part of civil rights legislation. They want the center to dictate to every little town in America that they must allow Drag Queen Story Hour. So I think from my perspective, I haven't seen this actually clearly defined, but practically speaking, the people who call themselves Christian nationalists or just even active as Christians in the political sphere, I think they do tend to be more active on the local level. And, yep. And because that's where you can get things done. So I'm positive about that. But yeah, hey, if there's people out there that want a Christian dictator or something, like I haven't heard that, I wouldn't be surprised. But AD, what do you think about that?
No, I think that's the way to go as well. I mean, it makes sense for America in particular, because we have, you know, different, you know, denominations that are fairly large and things like that. And, you know, these are questions, though. I'm just going to be totally honest that they're worth thinking about and kicking around right now. But we're just really, we've got like 1,000 steps before we even really have to consider it. But I think 100%. Yeah, that makes perfect sense.
And I should say, someone's saying that we would execute James Lindsay if we had power.
Yeah, so. That guy's an idiot. I'll say it. I mean, this on my channel, I just call him an idiot because that's an idiotic statement. Obviously, that's not true. But I will say that guys like James Lindsay would have absolutely no impact on the government, because why should he?
Yeah. Well, with that, you're going to get in trouble for that one. All right. Billy Allred is here. Hey, Billy, how are you doing?
Hey, good guys. Nice to see you all. It has been a few months since the men's retreat.
Yeah, I remember. Oh, yeah. You're going to come again?
Probably. If you haven't totally alienated me on this issue.
Uh-oh. All right.
I'm an old friend of Scott and Niall.
Yeah, good. I was just with a friend. I was just with Josh Abatoy's dad last week, who's friends with Scott and isn't a Niall. Have I been saying it wrong?
I don't know. I don't think I even say it right.
Okay. Yeah. So, and I think he's you know, I don't have any problem with them or anything personally, but yeah, you all right. Tell me what is your comment or question?
Well, I've got two and they're very different. So I want to say something about the mocking part, because that's been a bit of a turnoff to me too. And I just want to give an example of it. You know, John, the other day on your Facebook page, you posted about the Tennessee coffee shop experience. And I posted a comment there that I didn't think the direction you were going, you know, was exactly accurate. I disagreed with you a little bit, but pleasantly, you know.
Okay. Very,
and like 6 or 7 people already have reacted to that with the laughing meme, right? And it's not that I'm thin skinned, like I could care less.
What was your comment? And I don't know, did I laugh at it?
You didn't laugh at it. You actually responded to it.
I don't remember though.
My comment was that I don't think this is an example of Christian nationalism. I think it's just an example of the freedom we have in this country that's being expressed by probably a Christian business owner who wants that environment in their coffee shop.
Right.
So anyway, I just think, you know, the fact that people are laughing at me making.
Well, it wasn't about cultural Christianity. I could probably clarify this pretty easy. It was about it wasn't about Christian nationalism. It was about cultural Christianity.
You're right. You're right.
So,
I'm sorry.
So that was because the net had broadened and the attacks were now on cultural Christianity, which was when I was like, wait, this is insane, guys. Like, I can understand the Christian nationalism thing kind of, but like we should all want a Christian culture. So it just happened to be a day I was in Tennessee. And I just walked into this coffee shop and they were playing "I'll Fly Away." There were no rainbow flags. Everyone was nice. There was scripture on the wall. And I just thought, I really like this. And this is, it's so different. So yeah, like if I had said though, that this is Christian nationalism. Yeah. I think your critique would be fair that like, no, that there's no like government, anything going on, but yeah, as far as like Christian culture that, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So,
does that help?
Yeah, I my point about it is not about your comment or our disagreement about that particular thing as much as it is if you've got people that are, I know you can't be responsible for your followers, all of that, but if the people who are agreeing with you are coming on there and laughing, mocking basically with the laughing emoji, the folks that are trying to have a reasonable conversation with you, that's just not helpful. And I think that's part of what's making this issue more divisive than it needs to be.
Yeah.
But let me move past that. Cause I don't, you've already reacted to that with the last person and I appreciated your comments, but I am a local elected official. Okay. It's very small. We got less than 2,000 residents in my township. I'm on a township board of 3. So I have limited jurisdiction in multiple ways. You know, checks and balances. But I have generally approached my role in a pretty libertarian minded way, historic libertarian way. And I would never think of making an ordinance that would come out of, for instance, the second table of the law. I would, first of all, it wouldn't be within my jurisdictions because there's already state laws against murder and theft and things like that. But I'm wondering, would the rubber meet the road a little bit here in some of these conversations if we actually had a conversation about what your view of my role as a local legislator or leader should be under Christian nationalism versus what I have been doing? How should I make the reign of Christ prominent in Union Township, Pennsylvania?
Yeah, I love this question. AD, do you want to do a crack at that first, or do you want me to?
Why don't you go first? Because I was kind of distracted by the comments here, but I did hear basically what he said.
Oh, I'm not even looking.
I don't know what kind of local official he is. So.
Yeah, what's your, can you say or no?
Yeah, so it's a township supervisor position.
Okay.
Yeah, oh. in a small township. So we have limited legislative, but I can certainly enact things like burn bans. I can make laws about making sure you mow your grass. I don't do those things. I protect your property at all costs. I say you are the ruler and the king of your own property.
Sounds like you're doing pretty good.
Well, that's all libertarian minded. I don't see that necessarily enacting Christ's reign.
When you say libertarian, are you like Marie Rothbard type? Like what?
Yeah.
Okay. So classical libertarian more, mm-hmm. not the Ayn
Ron
Rand.
Paul, Ron Paul type.
Yep. Ron Paul. Okay. Gotcha. So on a local level where you are, have you had Drag Queen Story Hour come to your town? Have you had any of that?
Yeah, so we have Bucknell University here. So the local library, but they're definitely having things at the university related to this. And I'm on Republican committee as well here. And so when we had our DA candidates coming forward, because we got a DA's race right now, we asked the DAs, hey, are you willing to prosecute those that would have drag queen, sponsor drag queen shows in libraries for children that children are able to be present at under laws, that are against sexualization of minors. So I'm for that. I was the one asking those questions, are you willing to do this? I think it should be outlawed under those kinds of laws.
Is that libertarian though? So like at some point, it's not just like the non-aggression principle and the free market. Like there's something beyond that we're drawing from, I think, to make laws. And so we have to, it goes back to religion ultimately. Like we believe that there's a God who created an order and we're supposed to conform ourselves to that order. So it does take work to separate out like what is your responsibility versus in our system, especially the state responsibility, the national or the general responsibility, and then local citizens and what can you regulate and what you can't. But as a general rule, I think the vision is for every single person to submit themselves to the ordinances of God. And even those who aren't saved, I call it earthly good. It's not actually heavenly good. It doesn't please God in that sense, but they can Jesus said, give your son a fish when he asks for a fish instead of a snake. Like they can follow the law externally. And in so doing, it creates a situation where the church is more protected and people can live more peaceable and quiet lives as we're supposed to strive for. So like if you have an abortion clinic in your town and they're killing babies, or you have a library and they have a drag queen story hour coming, like I would just be looking at like any mechanism that you can possibly use to fight Absolutely. That. If you have, like property rights, protecting that, because we don't believe in stealing, right? Second Amendment, we call it Second Amendment, but it's really just the right for protecting yourself. If the state were to come and say, this actually just happened in a local municipality in Arkansas. I don't know if you saw it, where they did ATF. This was like 2 weeks ago. Said, we're going to come into your town. If you don't, you need to submit all the concealed carry permits to us. We need to know who those people are. And it was the town supervisor and the sheriff and one other guy like got up there and held a press conference and basically said, any federal official that comes into our town to violate the rights of our citizens, will be arrested.
Well, and I did that during COVID. I put out a statement to the newspaper that said, I will not enforce any draconian COVID jurisdictions that our governor puts out locally. In fact, I'll help our local citizens subvert them because they're unconstitutional.
I'd like to live in your town.
I'm just going to say, Billy, it sounds like you're doing a good job. I mean, listen, like you do the best you can in the role that you're in. You know, you're not king for the day, so you can't act like one, right? But you do have a jurisdiction and you do have, you know, a megaphone of, you know, commensurate size to what your role is. And sounds like you're using it.
But let's put the rubber on the road here. What if, for instance, an Islamic mosque, they want to open an Islamic mosque in my township. Right now, my perspective on it would be, you know, religious freedom. I'm a Baptist. I believe in religious freedom, freedom of conscience. So you have a freedom to be wrong and all the way to the pit of hell, unfortunately, when it comes to those things. So, you know, I'm not going to do anything to stand in your way. I'm not going to try to pave your path. I'm not going to try to help you, assist you, you know, beyond what I would any other citizen. But that's the kind of question I have about this Christian nationalism is, does it mean you think I should try to stop Islamic mosques from being erected in my township, for instance?
Well, I know at the very least, if you're holding a ceremony for Veterans Day or, you know, some civil ceremony, you're not going to ask the imam to come and do the invocation, right?
I'm not.
Right. And that's not a libertarian thing. That's because you're a Christian and you know this is false. And you're going to try to find a Christian if you can to come and give that invocation. So there's things like that, like privileging Christianity in ways that you're not going to privilege those other religions. And so I think that a lot of what people are thinking about when they think about, like, we want religion is like what Trump said when he was running. We're going to say Merry Christmas, right? We're going to have nativity scenes for Christmas. We're going to have invocations, and they're going to be Christian invocations at public ceremonies. We're going to swear in on the Bible, not another book, on the Bible itself. And there's probably like a lot of things I'm not thinking of right now, but it's just, because at the founding of our country, and this is, I go back to this, and I don't think it's perfect. No, nothing's, you know, perfect except the scripture and God's truth. But we did have a tolerance in many places, not all places. The Puritans in particular weren't very tolerant. They even kicked out Baptists. That's what people are freaking out about. But in the South more, you know, and I'm more Jeffersonian. So I'm more, I would consider myself to be more Federalist, more like tolerant in a way, more.
Oh, I'm an anti-Federalist.
What's it? Oh, yeah, I would have been an anti-Federalist because I'm a Federalist.
Is anti-Federalism.
Well, you know what I mean. You know what I mean.
I'm with you. Okay.
So, yeah, I don't want to confuse anyone, but that's one of the most confusing things of history is the anti-Federalists were the true Federalists. But anyway, so like in South Carolina, there were Jewish congregations. There weren't many, but there were a few. And it's like they didn't really bother anything. And guess what? They had to they had to adjust themselves to a Christian society in that case, because they were there more or less as guests or as they were outsiders in some ways. They were exceptions. Yeah, exactly.
Right.
Same thing, you know, with in other states that weren't controlled by the Puritans.
Yep.
There was generally a more religious tolerance, but there was a general respect for Christianity. Like in some states, there were even laws that you had to subscribe to a certain statement of faith to run for public office and stuff like that.
Right.
So, you know, I don't think there's a perfect or like, and I don't have like an ideal, like this is exactly the way it must be. I just have a direction in my head. And I'm like,
sure,
we need more Christianity. We need to preserve the Christianity we have. And with in the case of a Muslim mosque, you have to look at the prudence of that. If you fight that,
definitely,
how are you going to fight it? And then what kind of lawsuits are you going to have? And what kind of, is it worth, like, are there other things you could do with your time and your political capital that would be better? Like if you could save babies from being aborted, let's say, versus shutting down the Muslim mosque and there's only 10 Muslims, like, you know, that's what politics is. It's a lot of calculating. So I'm talking too long. Anyway,
I think, John, real quick, I'll just say again, it's a matter of prudence of what you're able to do. Like right now, you know, it might be enough for you to just, you know, every time that there's a prayer, you're having the Christian pastor come. It's just assumed we're doing Christian. We're setting up Christmas trees. We're doing Christian things, you know, civically we're not doing any Muslim thing civically. That might be enough for right now. I don't think there's anything in the Bible that you could find that would make you think that it should just be assumed that a mosque should be able to be erected in your town, and lots of things to make you think the opposite. So I don't think there's anything wrong with having a long-term goal of having zero mosques in your town. If you have a mosque in your town, there's nothing wrong with that. And then passing an ordinance to ban it in the hypothetical Christian ideal. We're not even close to that right now. We got like 10,000 steps ahead of it. That's not wrong. And that's not unbiblical. And that's, I think it's very moral to yeah. have that as a goal. But right now, the small things I think are probably enough for your role.
Yeah. So Edie, what you're saying is Billy's a Christian nationalist.
he's no, one whether he wants really to be or sure not.
He doesn't want that label.
It doesn't matter. You have it. If you're a Christian in politics, you've got the label.
You can't fight it now. Yeah. So no. Worry. Hey, Billy, it's good to see you, and looking forward to seeing you again. Yeah, this fall. So Earl Starbuck says this is another one of the, what did you call them? What are super chats? Ban the mosque. He says ban the mosque.
Simple as that.
They are
$5.
Just houses of worship. They are Sharia law courts whose construction signifies the subjugation of the area under Sharia. Well, I guess from their perspective, some of them probably would be the case. But
also got to think of the downstream consequences, right? Yeah. Like this. But anyway, again, we're not there yet, so it's not even worth it. But this whole reflex to be like, oh, I'm pro Christian liberty. It doesn't necessarily mean that you have to be okay with every pagan temple that they want to erect.
Yeah, yeah. All right, Gordon Sanchez.
Oh my goodness,
here.
You know what Billy said really offended me. The fact that he wouldn't be inclusive of somebody who is only trying to exercise their plurality. You know, I'm working on a statement right now, actually, over here at the Gospel Coalition. We've been working on this feverishly all day because we want people to come home. This is a great opportunity for people to come home. So I wrote up a statement. It took me about 16 hours in between IPAs. And it is called the Statement on Principled Pluralism. It just says, do what you're told. But, you know, I think that it reminds me of that verse that says, lead me into the water where your trust is without borders. And what we want is we want a borderless land. What is the gospel other than inviting us into the water to commune? So I do have a question, actually. I don't want to, I want to follow the rules because that's integral to my belief system.
Integralism. Wow.
Well, first, I actually have a list of denunciations for both of you. first, I'd like you to denunciate Brad Paisley's music, all of it, before he before he performed for Obama. I'd like you to denounce the state of Oklahoma. Mexican beer because it's cultural appropriation. I'd like you both to denounce your fourth paternal grandfather on either side. I would like Jonathan specifically to denounce the declarations of secession, especially for Alabama. And, and then you can just denounce generally your aberrant theologies. That's mainly what I have to say. Really, come home. Come home.
What are you, Catholic?
It's time to come home.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Gordon Sanchez.
Thanks, Gordon. Much appreciated.
For that. I don't know what to say. Totally. So do you recant, I guess, is the real question here.
Gordon's very convincing. I might have to consider that.
We've already been going over an hour. There's one final. I don't know. Should we finish this slideshow? There's only one more slide. And I was just going to say the other thing, the other play that's being made is that this is a power play. Yeah. I've seen this a few times. Virgil Walker, as people compete for attention, as leaders or members of the newest tribe movements come and go, this is a passing phase. As I always have, I will put my faith in Christ, proclaim the gospel, and live faith in public. And then he said, building your own brand is difficult when you're trying to grow followers. It's easier to leverage the previous success of others. And
guys, this is just so sad. Like, and you know, honestly, like I may have shared this and I may have shared a joke or two about it, but honestly, they've been going with every play that I remember the first time around, back in 2018 when I started this or whatever I started, this is the accusation. You know what I mean? Oh, you know, JD's just trying to build the platform. Oh, you know, he's just looking for attention and stuff like that. And, you know, I knew what I was doing. And you know, if I wanted a platform, I had a very easy path in front of me. You know, I had, you know, I had a relationship with Jared C. Wilson. You know, he had me kind of writing some articles for his little blog that he did for Midwestern Baptist. You know, and we were friendly, like we were so friendly, like, you know, we visited him just for fun and he watched my kid and stuff like that, you know, that kind of thing. And so I had a path laid before me, and multiple times along the way, I got the conversation, John, I don't think we ever talked about this, but I'm sure you've gotten the conversation too, that, well, you know, if you were just, you know, willing to play ball, I mean, if you were just a little less, less aggressive, like, you'd have all the opportunity in the world. I've gotten that. Yeah. People have been dispatched to tell me this. People from X29 and other things to tell me that I've got a lot of talent and this and that. And, you know, they butter you up. But basically, what they're trying to get you to do is to stop. Yeah. And, you know, at the end of the day, like, I know it's not true about myself. And the thing is, a guy like Virgil, like, I'm sure fielded these accusations before. Oh, he's just looking. I don't know. I mean, I haven't talked to Virgil about this, but I'm sure it's happened because it happened to all of us, you know? And it's just like to see that I knew they were following the playbook last week. And then to see this today, it's just like, it's not fun to see people that you were friendly with, you know, use the very same tactics that you and them used to like make fun of Big Eva for using. You know what I mean? It's like, the thing is, you know, for a fact, they know it's a tactic. It's a tool. And then they'll rip you, you know, in one tweet. And then in the next tweet, talk about how, we're about the tone, guys. Watch the tone. And I'm just here standing on the truth of Christ. It's like, really?
Well, there's a contrast. There's a clear contrast. And it's not named, but it's like, well, I'm doing this. Clearly, there's people, though. Like I'm a bulwark. I'm the lone bulwark.
Yes, you know, yes.
I'm standing against all these people who don't want to do that. And Scott O'Neill said something similar. I don't know if I need to read all of these. Pretty similar. Yeah, I don't need to like that. That's my my weakness. Sometimes I want to over like source things to show a narrative. But yeah, like I just wanted to say one thing about the power play argument, because I've heard this before from other people that the Christian nationalists are just after power. Look, guys, if they were after power, they would not be calling themselves Christian nationalists right now.
Yeah.
That's the last thing they would call themselves. And they'd be ingratiating themselves to the big ministries, like even G3. I don't know, you know, they're big enough. Yeah. Like G3
big enough.
You know, Ligonier and, you know, Desiring God, Gospel Cool, whatever. Like they would be trying to play the game to get into positions so that they in those circles, if they really were after power, but they're not. They automatically are blacklisting themselves from ever gaining a platform in any of those organizations as soon as they call themselves Christian nationalists. So the idea that this is after, like, they're after power is ridiculous to me. They want the civil magistrate to use power righteously. That's all it is. That's in general what it is. So, yeah.
Yeah, it's very silly. And it's, again, it's like, it's got this is the thing that I'll still give you guys advice. Like, cause if G3, anyone from G3 and their side watches this, I'll still give you some advice. Like these kinds of tweets, like the Virgil one in particular, I'm standing here on Christ as I've always had, and they're building their platform. And it's like, guys, like you don't get social media. You don't. This is why we're dominating the meme war. You knew you tried to do the memes. It just doesn't work for you. We're dominating it. These kinds of tweets are so transparent. Your sycophants will love them. Bottom line, your sycophants love everything you do. But these tweets, for people that are in the middle, they see them, man. And they see why is he doing this? Like, this is what they did to you. I remember when Russell Moore said that, you know, like, it's like, it's the same thing. We've been through this before. They don't, this kind of stuff, like, it's not helping you. I don't want this for you guys. I want to work with you. But the problem that we have here is that people are losing respect for you. And that's not good for anybody. That's not good for me. And that's not good for you. And I don't think you're going to take this advice, but stop using that playbook. Pick a different one. Do it differently. There's so many things you could do. differently that would still put you squarely in the driver's seat, in my opinion, I think.
Well, we've been going for almost an hour and a half, and there's so many more things that we could talk about, but I feel like we probably, for the sake of your time, AD, I know you don't have much, and I appreciate you giving it to us. And then for some of the listeners and for me, we probably need to land the plane here. You know, I guess in closing, I do want to say, I want to close on a good note here because like there's a lot of negativity in every sphere of life. Everywhere I turn on the news, I'm like, I don't want to listen to that. Like, it's all bad. Right. Now, of course, like it was a pretty day where I am and like things around my house are fun. And like, you know, there's I like going out and hiking and things like that. But socially speaking, like there's a lot of negativity going on out there. And I think it's just like I'm used to it now. And I think a lot of people feel the same way. We're used to seeing that wherever we turn. But I do want to encourage everyone with this. I have gotten so many encouraging letters, messages, comments, all of that over the last 2 weeks from people who see exactly what some of you are saying are seeing and are discouraged by. They see the same thing. There are tons of people who just want what they would consider to be a normal life. And you know, I was just in Tennessee. I was in Kentucky. I was with people down there, and it just gave me even a sense there of normalcy. Like there's a lot of normal people out there. They don't get involved in this drama.
Sure.
They just want to live a quiet and decent life, serve the Lord on the local level where they're at. And I see you guys, and I just want to say, I love you. I'm praying for you. And I think there's a massive opportunity that is starting to unfold before us because there's a leadership vacuum and there's a lot of young guys. I'm in a chat group with a bunch of young guys who are just, they're pastors, some of them, and they're ready to go. And some of like five of them did that statement on social justice or not social. That was a slip. Christian nationalism. There we go. And I hadn't even heard of a bunch of these guys, but they're young pastors. They're on fire. And, you know, I think that the Lord's raising up leaders. So don't get discouraged out there. So, AD, you have anything?
I think that there's a lot to be encouraged about here, too. Number one, I do think that James White the other day was kind of lamenting that there's not progress in the conversation being made. I totally disagree. I think there's tons of progress being made. I think it's ugly and it doesn't have to be. It's ugly progress, but there's a lot of progress that's being made. And I disagree that most people are seeing all of this and are the waters are muddier than they used to be. I think that there's more clarity now. I think there's a lot of people that are kind of sick of the bickering and arguing, but there's a lot of people getting it now. There's a lot. And so through all of the ugliness, it doesn't have to be this way. I don't want it to be this way, but through all of it, I think tons of people are getting a lot of knowledge about what's happening. And that's a very good thing. I think also that this whole conversation represents kind of a positive move forward. Instead of just playing defense, here's what we could do. We're fighting about what we can do, but at least we're talking about it. And at least there's some action being taken. And a lot of it's at the local level, so you don't hear about it. But some of it is not. Some of it's kind of in your face as well. And that's a very, very good thing. And so I think that, to be honest, I think that the enemy, and I'm not talking about Satan, although, of course, he's ultimately the enemy. But the enemies, the flesh and blood enemies that are politically kind of maneuvering, they want to do everything in their power to get Christians to do nothing.
Yes.
And to think, neutralize. To think if you do something, that must be that reflexive neo-reaction thing that we were planning all along. Like they want you to be kind of hopeless where it's just like, well, there's nothing I can do. So I'm going to do nothing. That's what they want.
If everything is Charlottesville, if everything is January 6th, then you'll never do anything.
Right.
If you think that that's what it's going to be treated as.
That's right.
I've never gotten so many super chats. I don't even know how to like. So here's another. I feel like I have to show it because it.
You do. That's the best.
Matthew paid $20. Do you either of you plan on doing more engagement with Lutherans or Catholics? I think that is important since I think we have things to learn from each other, especially if we want to see opportunities and challenges. Well, I'll tell you this. I'm going to a Lutheran colloquy in June. And I can't really disclose any, it's private, so I can't really tell you any details, but I'm going to be with some Missouri Synod Lutheran pastors in June. And so at talking about the Lutherans, yes, I do plan on it, but I'm waiting for some things to happen. This Corey Mahler situation, I don't think has quite ended in every way. And I think, I think, AD, I honestly think that the guys, some of the higher ups think maybe there's like a sleeper cell, like Corey Mahler is like one guy. And like,
sure,
you know, if you can get him and do some Jack Bauer moves, like you'll find out where all the rest of them are, because we know there's got to be like they're right under the surface, ready to take over the denomination. Corey was just, you know, dumb enough to go online and say what they're all thinking, kind of.
Sure.
I don't know who's thinking that or what, but it's weird stuff that's going on, and I'm waiting for some of that to pass, and then we'll talk about it.
Yeah, I'm not planning on doing anything, but I'm glad to hear that, John. I know I've heard of a lot of things like that. So
yeah, all right. Sure. Well, we'll end the podcast then. We have 300 people live streaming now. Wow. God bless everyone.
Thanks for watching. And Ricardo, man, if I'm ever in the South, I'll hit you up. I definitely want to come over.
You must just have been looking at something I didn't see.
Don't worry.
All right, Ricardo, I hope I'm invited. I don't know. All right. I'll talk to you later.
Bye, God bless.
Save big on your Memorial Day barbecue, all in the Kroger app. Get 3-pound rolls of juicy 80% lean ground beef for $3.49 a pound with a digital coupon. Then get select varieties of flavorful Powerade, Body Armor Super Drink, or Arizona Tea for 77 cents each, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.